ear, piece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. Welcome to another edition of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Eric Billingsley
and Tim Coker.
And here we are once again, bringing you great nerdiness from the world of nerds. And, well, we're one person shy. We, Tim Matson has got rehearsals. We'll grant him that. So then we tried to get Brett to fill in again, but she had an alternate engagement. You know, we tried. But it's us three. We've done it before. We can do it again. Right, guys?
Hell yeah.
Heck yeah.
Especially, I might want to bring up Kung Fu Bible Stories again, because I started reading that comic, Tim, after you highly recommended it last time around. And it's cool. It's cool.
So right?
We might have to talk about that. Great artwork in there, too. Some fun stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, let's start out. We're going to talk about some television stuff like we usually do. Before we do that, a couple things I want to promote. First of all, thanks to you, Tim Coker, we have a t-shirt line that looks decent.
Hell yeah.
So people can go out and support this podcast. Now, let me tell you, we're not going to make any money off these things, trust me, but they will help ease the sting of storage costs for these podcasts. If you want to help out, check out the nerduppodcast.blogspot.com website, and we have a link to the merch table, and you can get a bunch of t-shirts, coffee mugs, and all sorts of things. I'm telling you, this design by Tim is awesome. We all look good, and that's rare.
You wear this t-shirt, guaranteed, you will get attention. People will ask you about your t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. And especially, here's the thing, on most of the t-shirts, most of the designs, most of the items you can get, on the back of them, there's a QR code. And in case somebody asks you, what is that for? You can turn around and have them scan the QR code on the back, and it'll take them directly to the Nerd Up Podcast website. How clever is that?
Show them your backside.
So, anyway, help support the podcast. Check that out. Also, once again, I want to give thanks to the Eagle Theater here in Robinson and the Clintonia Eagle in Clinton, Illinois for making it possible for us to do movie reviews, although I don't have one to review this week because nobody wanted to go see Dracula Untold with me. And it was Halloween weekend. Got the nerve of these people.
Yeah. It wasn't very promising, was it?
Well, it's Halloween weekend.
Okay.
They've had dumber movies. I don't know, really. I just wanted to see it out of curiosity. I didn't expect too much out of it.
I heard that movie Ouija Board was like number one or number two for a weekend. I was like, and the trailers for that looked positively terrible. Why can't we get good, scary movies for Halloween anymore?
I know. We had Annabelle, but that was like weeks before Halloween.
And I actually heard it really wasn't very good.
I liked it. It had a bunch of creepy moments, super creepy moments. Not those things that jump up and make you, jump out of your seat moments. It was creepy where my hair stood up on the end. And that's pretty odd, because I can expect everything in a horror movie by now. I mean, I've been watching horror movies for about 30-some-odd years. But there were moments in Annabelle where I just, my arms, the back of my neck, my head, all the hairs just stood up. And I'm like, whoa.
James Wan, who directed, The Conjuring, who afterwards said he wasn't going to direct any more horror films. Well, I guess they drove a dump truck full of cash up to his door because he changed his tune. And he's going to be directing The Conjuring 2, which probably won't be out till early 2016 is from what I heard. But that's good because, The Conjuring was one of the better ghost stories I've seen for a while.
Yeah, so. And Annabelle was a good prequel to it, although I'm sure they took a lot of licenses and to make the movie. But still, hey, it was okay. But now, either way, the Eagle Theater, they did show their annual Rocky Horror Picture Show midnight movie. Although,
nice.
Yeah, I wished I didn't get to make it this year, and I was so upset, but I was shuttling teenagers back and forth between haunted house in town at the local college. And by the time midnight hit, I'm like, I'm tired.
So does the Eagle Theater do it with a live shadow cast, or the traditional, just everyone stays in their immediate area? And I don't like the shadow cast. cast, okay? Yeah. I mean, very rare. Most of them are terrible. Most of the costumes are terrible. And I just, you know, it's just, it's distracting the screen, you know?
I played Eddie in the Shadow Cast in Norfolk, Virginia, so. But no, you know, you're right. Sometimes it can distract. No, I don't think they have one here. In they don't have the Shadow Cast. At least they didn't last year. This year, I think it
feels too structured, I don't know. To me, the very spirit of Rocky Horror is anarchy, and that should be a big part of it. But, you know, when it's all being conducted by a select group of people, it kind of sucks some of the fun out of it, in my opinion.
Well, the one thing, I never thought of it that way.
That's a really good way to put it, because it does seem kind of regimented, you know, that there's this sort of script that you follow. And when I was like 18, 19, I thought it was mind-blowing. I have no idea what it would look like now if I went to it.
Like I said, I went last year, and it was a blast. Had our toilet paper and everything. They wouldn't let us bring in rice. I can only imagine why, because of the cleanup. That's like the hardest thing to clean up, I'm sure. So
yeah, I guess so.
You know, they did toilet paper, and some people snuck in toast last year. I think food items were what was restricted. But still, the Eagle Theater did it. And I found this out. Remember, we're talking about the Hobbit movies and how they're probably going to show a marathon of those. Well, they're doing that with the Hunger Games movie series. Mockingjay Part 1's getting ready to come out. And they're having a day you can pay $20, and you can see all the movies, including the new one. And then the new one will start before the actual midnight preview. So you pay for all day, $20, and you can get in to see all the movies up until now, and including the new ones. Again, I'm hoping he does it with The Hobbit when it comes out.
What a great theater.
And it really is.
Yeah, I know. I wish we had one like that.
I realize that you're supposed to give the theater a plug and everything, and I sound like I'm shilling, but I'm not. I really think that's fantastic that this theater does that for you guys.
Yeah. And,
absolutely.
Well, I've said before, you know, Eric Gubelman, the owner, him and his wife, Susan Gubelman, they're both nerds inside. And they know and appreciate what true film experience is supposed to be, whether from Rocky Horror to, you know, seeing all the Hunger Games movies to everything. You know, they understand where the nerddom sits in that. They kind of play to that audience. And, of course, they still bring in movies like that Gone Girl one that I still have no desire to see.
Really? I liked it. I thought it was very, very good. Plus it was filmed down here, so two of my friends are in it. One of them is fairly prominent too. I never knew that. Yeah, yeah. Have you not seen it either, Tim?
No, I'm trying to get time to go, but I just haven't managed it yet.
Yeah, it's a good film. It's definitely worth your time. I mean, it made me want to read the book, because after I had some questions about the plot, and after speaking to some people, I realized that there were some things left out of the script that might have made it clearer that are in the book, and I was like, oh well, I need to read the book then.
Yeah, basically the only Ben Affleck movie I have a desire to see is out of curiosity, is the new Superman v Batman.
Sure.
So Ben Affleck kind of lost me with Reindeer Games, I think.
Didn't see that one.
No, I didn't either.
Lucky. But yeah, thanks to Eagle Theater for making it possible. Like I said, no movies this week, but Big Hero 6. In fact, let's start talking about this off the bat here. I want to talk about Big Hero 6. I can't wait for this movie. I'm almost to the point of Guardians of the Galaxy can't wait for this movie.
Wow.
I know. And this just happened within the last week or so. Mainly because, well, first of all, you know, the Disney Infinity game for the Wii U, and I think it's for the Xbox and PS4 as well. They've released the Marvel Heroes that you can, it's got a little stand, and you place the heroes on there, and whatever hero you place on there, you can play as. Now, before Disney Infinity, it was like, you know, Buzz Lightyear. You had the Incredibles. You also had, like, Lone Ranger and Tonto. Basically, Disney-owned movie franchises that you could play as those characters. Pirates of the Caribbean and such. And now they've released it as Marvel Heroes. And, you know, we got the set with Iron Man, Black Widow, and Thor. And it's like, that was the starter pack. And then Isaac went out and got Spider-Man and Nova, which is really cool. And he also bought Venom and Groot. And you can buy, there's packs with the various Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, now they've released the Big Hero 6 models. And you can, basically, I think Skylanders was the previous game that did this, if you remember that game. But anyway, you can play as the Big Hero 6. And looking at those characters, I'm like, this should be kind of fun. And the game itself is fun. It's a combination of missions, and you know, you go out and defeat the enemies, but it's also got a sandbox aspect to it, kind of like Minecraft game, where you can create your own world and you can design your own living room and house and your own world altogether. And so it's got that little aspect of it too. So it's like a dual game. When I saw the Big Hero 6 characters, I'm like, you know, that's gonna be a cool movie. Then I started seeing some more trailers on TV. They're showing more and more, and I'm like, this is gonna be fun. So I look back at that Ends of the Earth Spider-Man issue that had Big Hero 6, and I realized Baymax is not a big white balloon. I was like, oh, I forgot about that. It's kind of a lizard-like creature that the guy builds armor for him. And there's also another lizard-like creature called Fredzilla, the guy that can change into the lizard, but that's beside the point. That's a different character in Big Hero 6. And anyway, they're showing all these characters, and I'm like thinking, okay, they're going to do a full Big Hero 6. It's not just going to be Baymax and the smart kid. It's going to be a full character because they show more and more. They showed one trailer just recently that shows the Fredzilla, and that's the one that I was looking forward to. And I'm like thinking, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be along the lines of fun. It's actually going to be a combination of The Incredibles and Guardians of the Galaxy, from what I'm seeing and from what I'm hoping. Big Hero 6 coming out. You guys, any thoughts on that?
I've been really charmed by the trailer. I haven't read any of the comics. You know, I'm coming to this pretty cold, but I think that it looks like a really fun movie. I think it visually, it seems like I like the design and that it has I don't know, it just looks really promising. You know, I mean, I don't know anything more than what I saw in the trailer, but yeah, I'm on board. I think ever since John Lasseter kind of came in and started overseeing a lot of their projects, Disney animation stuff has gotten a lot more worth looking yeah. at, you know, and kind of paying attention to. Yeah, I think it looks like a really fun popcorn movie, and what's wrong with that?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. I will say this, Guardians of the Galaxy just basically changed my world of superhero movies. You know, that was like, I mean, just like Captain America, Winter Soldier kind of changed my world too. Guardians of the Galaxy even more so, because all of a sudden these guys are not from Earth necessarily. Sure, Star-Lord right. is, but that's a long story. But anyway,
yeah,
they took it all and just placed it right here in front of you on the screen, you know. And I think that's where the Big Hero 6 is going to be placing. It's San Fran, Tokyo or something like that, that they combine. Now, in the comic, the Spider-Man comic, he actually had to go to Tokyo to find Big Hero 6. So I think Disney will take their, you know, the Disney license. Some people call it poetic license or whatever, but no, it's a Disney license. They change things a lot. I think they're going to add, you know, their own little twist to things here and there, but I don't think it's going to be a bad thing. I'm looking forward to it.
Of course, you guys know that Guardians of the Galaxy is the second biggest moneymaker of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was number one in our hearts.
It was, very exactly. much so. It was number one, period, with me. It just was awesome.
Movie is coming out on digital download in 2 weeks, I think. Yeah, and then it comes out on Blu-ray in like early December, I think.
Just in time for Christmas.
Oh, hell yeah.
I want it now.
Me too, Veruca Salt.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm going to own it too. I can't wait till it comes out. But yeah, Big Hero 6, I think you guys, you know, I might be wrong on this one, but I was harping on Guardians of the Galaxy long before Captain America Winter Soldier. When I first heard it was coming out, I'm like, you guys, you got to watch this. It's going to be awesome. I'm having that same feeling with Big Hero 6.
Getting the vibe.
Well, all right. Well, let's talk.
Definitely up for it.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. And if nothing, like you just said, Tim, good popcorn movie. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
Since I don't know what you guys watched over Halloween, we were just talking about how there really wasn't much in the way of good Halloween movies at the theater. So I made it a point to have my own little mini marathon on Halloween night. The first one I watched was one that I remember loving when I was a kid, and unfortunately has not weathered that well. Not very well at all, actually. It's called Ghost Story.
Oh, the Peter Straub?
Well, yes, it was based on that, yeah. But it was, I think it was a loose adaptation.
Okay.
But it stars John Houseman, Melvin Douglas, Fred Astaire, and Douglas Fairbanks Jr., as well as Craig Wasson and Alice Krieg.
What a cast.
Exactly, which, you know, you would think that with a cast like that, it can't lose. Well, it scared the crap out of me when I was, I don't know, probably 12 years old. I snuck into this rated R movie to see it. And it's still got some, I guess, decent scares, but it's a really clunky script. It really tries hard, and I don't know. It's got some great old stars in it, and it's not a terrible movie, but it would be hard for me to recommend it now. But the movie I saw after that was one I'd never seen before, and it's one of those rare times when you watch a movie just sight unseen, knowing almost nothing about it, and just was blown away. And everyone has to see this movie. It is so good. It's called The Awakening. It was made in 2011 by BBC Films, and it's a period ghost story, which right there you've got me, because those are my favorite types of horror films. I don't know why, but I don't know if you remember the movie The Others with Nicole Kidman. That one really creeped the hell out of me, and that's, you know, one of those high point movies. And of course, The Devil's Backbone, brilliant, Guillermo del Toro. I don't know what it is about that particular subgenre, but I'm a sucker for it every time. And this one is no exception. It is so well done. The character development, the acting. It stars Rebecca Hall, who I know I've seen in other things. She's got a very familiar face, but I can't place where I've seen her, and Dominic West, who I've also seen in many other things, and his name I knew when I saw it in the credits. I mean, it's spooky. It's got a lot of those moments where, you know, the hair on the back of your neck will stand up. But the thing that really makes it stand out is the way that the atmosphere and the thematic material, the way it meshes with the story. Now, if you watch it, you may see at the end, I had a little bit of a problem with the climax at the ending because it felt a little tacked on and unnecessary. I didn't really need that moment of excitement at the end, and it felt really unnecessary. But I understand why the producers probably said, well, no, we need a big moment at the end or whatever. So be it. It's not a deal breaker. It's still a really good film, but there's also another minor criticism. It didn't bother me, but some people might have a problem with it, is that the story itself, and once the mystery is revealed, it kind of cheats. It doesn't really give you the pieces to put it together on your own, which a lot of movies do. Even some really good movies do that. But it's really not about the story so much. The story is secondary to the thematic material. And that's another thing I'm always a sucker for, is when you can really marry good thematic material with a story, I'm with it every step of the way. And in this case, it's really the characters and the palpable feeling of loneliness that you get from the very first frame is just absolutely amazing. So anyway, the movie is The Awakening. I highly recommend it. I think someone told me that it's on Netflix. I actually had it on Blu-ray. But if you can see it, put it on your list. Put it at the top of the list.
Will do.
All right. Since you advised.
And actually, since you were talking about loving the kind of ghostly vibe of mm-hmm. The Others, for instance, I want to strongly recommend a movie that Criterion released a couple of months ago called The Innocents. I think it's from the 50s. It's got, I'm very well informed. But anyway, I don't have the facts in front of me, but it's directed by Jack Clayton, and it stars the amazing Deborah Carr. And it's an adaptation of Henry James's The Turn of the Screw, which is a classic ghost story. And, you know, it's a tale of this kind of governess and looking after these two children out at a remote country estate. And she starts to suspect that something is very wrong. And it's just one of the most beautiful horror films you'll ever see. It's a beautiful black and white CinemaScope kind of widescreen image, and the Blu-ray really allows for you to just fall into these gorgeous scenes that I don't know, it's a movie where the mood really creeps up on you, and everybody I know that I've shown it to or recommended it to has always just been knocked out by it. So if you like that idea, that kind of genre, I really recommend you check it out, Eric, and all of our listeners at home.
yes, I remember reading The Turn of the Screw many eons ago, but I remember it really did creep me out, so yes, I will definitely put that on my list.
And I want to add that nothing is harder to capture than a great performance from a child actor, seems like. And in this movie, it has maybe my all-time favorite performance by a young boy. He's just phenomenal. It's Martin Stevens, who's the same lead boy in Village of the Damned with a blonde wig.
Oh, yeah, wow.
If you've seen that. Yeah. And he plays the boy Miles and is just, he gives levels of shading to his readings of the lines that no kid his age could possibly understand. So either he was just coached brilliantly or he just was a natural talent, but definitely worth watching, even just for that.
Well, it's kind of like, I mean, we're talking about child actors. The guy that's playing Bruce Wayne in Gotham.
Yeah.
It's like that. I just watched an episode of it yesterday, trying to catch up. It was a Bruce Wayne heavy episode, and the kid was just phenomenal. I don't know what it is. There's that rare kid out there that can actually act. Or, like you said, maybe he's just coached really well.
I think he's the best part of the show, by a long shot.
He's able to play a character who is aged beyond his years without it feeling forced or like he's playing a character who's aged beyond his years. I mean, it feels very naturalistic.
Yeah, and that's exactly, I mean, when you find a kid actor like that, hopefully you can, you know, they'll come on and become even more famous. I guess I'm trying to think of any actor today that, you know, an adult today that was started out as a child actor that had that, you know, that feeling. But it seems like child actors just kind of fade out real quick.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we'll get onto Gotham later, but those conversations between young Bruce Wayne and Jim Gordon, I mean, it's not an adult talking to a kid. It's like an adult conversation.
Yeah.
Jim has this respect for the kid and doesn't lie to him and doesn't, you know, sugarcoat things. And the kid can, you know, can basically take everything he's handing out and hand it back to him. He's not intimidated by Jim Gordon at all. And
yeah.
anyway, it's just one of the angles that I'm really starting to enjoy about the show.
Well, I guess it doesn't count. I'm listening to a great audiobook, LA Theater Works production of Hamlet. It's got a ghost in it.
Yeah, all right.
And Stephen Collins plays the king, so that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
In light of recent events. But well, Stacy Keach is the ghost. How about that? That's cool. But anyway, so yeah, I know I haven't had any good movies. The last good movie I saw was when I forced Isaac to sit down and watch Alien, the original.
Oh, can't go wrong with that.
We both had a blast watching that one.
So it still works for a kid now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, there were moments when it's like, you know, like when the alien, at the end of it, where the alien is folded up in on the escape pod thing, and he's folded up within the air shaft, or not even the air shaft, whatever that ducting area is.
Yeah.
And Isaac said, you know, the physics of this show really don't work right about now. And I was like, wait, watch him unfold. And then when he unfolds, then you're like, wow. And it still held up. You could see him unfold his body out of that little small crevice. It's kind of like, wow, it did fit. And it worked. But yeah, it's still upheld. He loved it. And I loved watching it again. And so it was really cool. So that's about the last real movie I got to watch.
Did you watch the director's cut or the theatrical cut?
I think it was the theatrical cut because it was on like Encore or Stars or something like that. They're doing like a horror
not
movie.
A lot of huge differences in the director's cut, but some nice little surprises if you're familiar with the film a lot.
I've never been much for director's cuts, except for the only director's cut I ever watched that I loved was Dune, that 6-hour version or however.
Well, not to disappoint you, but that's actually not a director's cut. Actually, David Lynch had his name taken off of it because he wanted nothing to do with it. It's if you look at the credits on the 6-hour cut, it's directed by Judas Booth.
Is that right? Okay. Well, never knew that. I just like, that's about the only one that was different from theatrical that I really paid attention to. And I loved it because it was so dang long, because I always thought those books needed more justice. All right, well, tell you what, let's move on to television if you guys are fine with that.
Yep.
I want to start out talking about Doctor Who this time around, because I just got caught up today. And Eric and I, Tim, before we got a hold of you, we were talking about the Mummy on the Orient Express episode. I want to go ahead and start out talking about that one and catch us all up with Doctor Who. Is everybody caught up on Doctor Who?
Nope.
Yep.
I'm three episodes behind.
Three episodes. Okay, we'll try not to spoil it too much, but
yeah, the Mummy episode was the last one I saw.
Okay.
Oh man, this is like when we were talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., isn't it?
Yeah, I'm afraid it might be.
Oh man, all right, go.
Well, and the thing is, now I'm feeling your pain, Tim. Yeah. Because I'm caught up. But all right, let's talk about the Mummy on the Orient Express. First of all, I want to talk about this aspect of it that Eric and I were talking about earlier, and Tim, jump in whenever you want. One thing about this episode is the Doctor reminded me 100% of the first Doctor in that episode. So what's it, William Hartnell?
Hartnell. He was that was a very Hartnell story in the way that he acted. Yeah, for
yeah.
Sure.
And it totally. And not only that, but and this is what I was talking about there, is that the soundstage feel. It felt like it was like the cheapest soundstage they had available. You know, it's like, oh, we'll stick you guys in this closet to film this scene, you know. And you could hear the echoes of the soundstage. Also, there were moments when it felt like a British soap opera, like when she's talking, Clara is talking with that woman. And it's like the lighting was just like, it wasn't, you know, stage lighting. It was like, oh, hold the flashlight just this way, you know, that type of thing. It was the original Doctor Who, and it felt 100% like I was watching an older episode, not one of the new series. Plus the way with Peter Capaldi playing that Doctor that way, the way he's doing it now more and more, it's like, I'm loving it. I'm totally loving it, because the stories are going back to being pretty simple, really. I mean, they're pretty darn simple. And yet they're pulling out all these things, and it's no longer... And you can see that they're trying to tear away from the boyfriend thing, as we've discussed before. And you can tell that, you know, it's like just shy of saying, just move on. I'm the Doctor. I can't be your friend. I'm here to save other people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was one of my favorite episodes so far this season. Although I will say the one where the forest growth all of a sudden overnight, that was kind of a unique story. I like the way they told it and what the outcome. I can't spoil it for you, Eric.
Well, back to the Mummy episode, since that's the last one I saw. I agree 100%. It felt very much like a throwback to classic Doctor Who. And when they brought back Doctor Who, and I knew this was going to happen, and it took me a while to get used to it, I never needed super special effects for Doctor Who. As a matter of fact, the running down the same corridor 20 times became part of the charm. Shooting the original Doctor Who on such a short budget forced them to be creative in ways that really elevated the show. And that's something that I think that modern fans don't really understand, in particular because I think most modern fans won't even go back and watch the original episodes, which is really a crime. But they're, you know, when they brought it back, there's all this emphasis. It's like, oh, look at the new special effects we can do. Look at all the CGI we can afford to do. And I was like, well, I'm not impressed. I can see this. I can see better CGI in all kinds of movies and American series. I watch Doctor Who for very different reasons. Right. And they, I'm not saying that they've completely gotten away from that, because I would have stopped watching if they didn't still have some of that and they weren't able to hit on it occasionally. And The Mummy on the Orient Express was a great example of that. And yes, you can find them to these one or two locations or sets. The focus is on the writing and on the character development. And yes, he also reminded me a lot of Hartnell. And I really like the direction that they're taking this Capaldi's character in, that he's very aloof, much more than anyone since Hartnell that I've seen as the Doctor. There's a sense of otherness about him that you really know he's not a human. He's apart from humans. He loves the human race, but he's also, it's sometimes you wonder if he's not fascinated with the human race the way that an entomologist is fascinated with bugs. And there was a lot of that in this episode, and I like that, even though, you know, obviously Clara has an issue with that, but it really adds a layer to the Doctor that is refreshing, because, you know, we've not seen that for a while.
Well, I gotta ask Tim, I gotta ask you this especially. The Doctor was allowing these people to die one at a time just to test this, or try to test his theory each time. How'd you feel about that?
Well, you know, it's morally interesting, which is something that Doctor Who hasn't been for a long time. You know, it's something where I don't know that it was within his power to stop the creature from killing these people. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't right. know that he necessarily had it in his power. So I think it was a very clear-headed choice that he made to try to be in a position to see it when it happens. And it seems horrible, but, you know, that's one of the things that I always hated about the Russell T. Davis era, is the Doctor constantly needing to go into these pushed in close-ups where he's crying and talking about how he won't let one person die. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he stands up on something and shouts at everybody that I am the last of the Time Lords and nobody dies today, you know. Yeah. All that horrible crap. And, like, I understand that David Tennant has a lot of fans and a lot of people really like that conception of the Doctor, but I did not. And I think that the show works a lot better when it's not so slobbery emotional, and when it's a little cooler and a little, I don't know, when he feels a little more like an interesting character and not an annoying jackass, you know. Mm-hmm. So, okay, now I'm getting too personal about it. But a lot of people are talking about how the Capaldi Doctor is so abrasive and so horrible. And oh, my God. And to me, you know, he's an interesting character. And I think yes. that I like him not really being patient with human niceties. And, you know, sometimes it gets stupid where I feel like, okay, and this is me being a total paleo geek, which is what I am. You know, I love the old stuff. But, you know, William Hartnell was a tremendously interesting actor and was able to make his character very interesting as, like, an interesting old man. And Patrick Troughton was, I think, actually, as an actor, I think he's the best actor to ever play the part. And his creation of the Doctor was as a guy, you know, who occasionally was wacky, but often was kind of more likely to kind of keep his mouth shut and watch what's happening, you know. And then, you know, Pertwee was very heroic, although he wore absurd clothes.
Right.
He was very straight up heroic. And like my friend Brian always said, he's like the most masculine Doctor with the most feminine appearance, you know. But then Tom Baker came in and he was just, you know, bughouse crazy, yeah. you know, and he's phenomenal because Tom Baker is an absolute original. And I feel like on the show, they have really worked on ever since the show came back, they have really, like, been busting a nut to try to make the Doctor eccentric all the time.
Right.
You know, oh, my kidneys are the wrong color and all these, other, you know, and it's really forced because you're just going to look like you're going to pull a muscle trying to be Tom Baker. Just be interesting. And I feel like a lot of the time, Peter Capaldi is allowed to just be interesting, which I think is a huge step in the right direction. And I want to completely agree with you on the Orient Express episode. It it reads very like an updated version of the classic series. And it also, just because of my general distaste for the Russell T. Davis era, it was particularly satisfying because during the opening minutes, I thought, oh my God, this is just like that Space Titanic story. And that one was awful.
Same.
You know,
I had the exact same reaction.
My heart just stank. It was like that moment in Silence of the in the Library, you know, where it has a really good start, you know, and it's really exciting. And then the doors bust open and it's Donna. And I'm like, oh, you know, so I really felt terrible about this. But then within 5 minutes, they had jerked the wheel and taken it into so much more interesting of a direction. Because, Eric, like you say, Doctor Who is Doctor Who. It's not, you know, it can't convincingly do Die Hard. And yet, Russell T. Davis really wanted to do Die Hard on a space Titanic with a gay cabaret icon, Kylie Minogue, I guess. Yeah. You know, so, like, it's all right, but it's just not my thing. But I just think the show is so much smarter now, and I don't love it, and I get tired of Stephen Moffat trying to show us how clever he is. But overall, I do like the show, and despite my colossal amount of baggage I carry around, I'm happier now than I have been for years.
Yeah, I'm very happy with Peter Capaldi, especially after that Mummy on the Orient Express episode. That one right there, I mean, that seemed to turn the season around for me, because before it was like, oh God, they kept struggling with the fact, you're not my boyfriend, you're my boyfriend, you're not my boyfriend, okay, I got a boyfriend now. It's like,
yeah,
it was like, leave that alone, okay?
Why do we have to have romantic relationships constantly on the show? Even if it's not the Doctor, it's like now it's Clara and what's his name?
Mr. Pink.
Yes, Mr.
Danny.
Pink.
Danny Pink, that's it, yeah.
Danny Pink, right. There's just, it's like there's constantly got to be a relationship. But there, how often do we see relationships with the companions in the old series?
Well,
almost never.
Well, Eric.
Well, yeah.
I gotta jump in here. I don't know if that's going to be an issue anymore. Okay, enough said.
It's hard to say. Yeah, I will say, like, it has to be there, Eric, because Russell T. Davis baked it into the DNA of new Doctor Who.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, they knew that all of us sad, you know, geek guys were going to watch the show. So what they did is they altered the format of the show so that like emotional stuff was hugely important, mm-hmm. and especially like sexual chemistry between the Doctor and his companions. Mm-hmm. And oh, will they or won't they? You know, moonlighting stuff, right?
And it all started with David Tennant and Rose Tyler, you know, or you know, the Tenth Doctor and Rose Tyler.
Yeah, I mean, I think they even were working on that with Eccleston, but with David Tennant, they went whole hog on Doctor Boyfriend, and so, you know, the thing is, the show has an enormous audience of ladies.
Shippers.
and you know, yeah, and shippers in general. And I don't want to be sexist about it, but I do think at times the show has been kind of conspicuously pandering towards what it thinks a female audience might want. But that said, I think that given the fact that we don't have Dr. Boyfriend anymore, I'm sure that they were leery of walking away from having love drama altogether.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, it's like I remember hearing an interview with Paul McCartney in 1964 or something like that. And so the interviewer was talking about, you know, why do you let Ringo sing or whatever? And then Paul's like, well, Ringo's got a lot of fans, you know? And it's true, he did. Mm-hmm. And like, just because you, I've tried to make room for everybody in the Doctor Who tent, even though I don't always agree with them.
I like this last episode they explore the afterlife, and you get to figure out more of what that lady was about.
Missy.
Yeah, Missy.
Yeah.
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 Oh, my gosh, Eric.
I'm kind of dreading that because I'm not really liking that whole through line that's connecting these episodes. But
they haven't
revealed much about it, so maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised. But so far, I've been kind of like, oh, I don't think I like where this is going.
I'm not interested in hearing you talk about how you feel about episodes you haven't bothered to watch yet, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying I'm talking about what I have seen.
Yeah, but wait till you catch up, Eric. Then you're like, okay. Holy crap, that was awesome. I like the idea. I'm like, yes. Yeah, Missy, the name is derived from somewhere pretty cool.
Okay.
I said enough.
Yeah, I just so badly want to keep saying more, but.
All right. Listen,
I'll get caught up for our next time.
All right.
Yeah, you better be, because you're going to love it, and I want your response. Actually, we'll probably see you on Facebook. You're going to, like I did whenever Mockingbird appeared on S.H.I.E.L.D. when I was watching that episode. I'm like, yes.
Holy moly.
Yes. So actually, let's move on to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yay!
Let's talk about that. Mockingbird on S.H.I.E.L.D. She even got a cool costume, so to speak. The only thing I haven't seen her do yet, I gotta say this about S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, Mockingbird, she's got the batons that she works with, but she can somehow she puts them together and they make a staff, and she battles with that too. I haven't seen her do that yet, but she's got the batons.
Oh, I totally want to see that.
And I think there's some sort of, because it's a quick action that she does. She just takes them and slams them together, and then it's a staff, and she whoops butt with that. So I can't wait to see that. They've really, so far, they've stuck with the character of Mockingbird from what I've seen. Very little Mockingbird, but she's one of my favorite heroes to play as or with or in my team on the Marvel Avengers Alliance video games. It's like she's like the coolest character to play with because she can adapt everybody's fighting style.
Oh, that? Okay, I was going to say, what is the significance of Mockingbird? I haven't really seen that yet, but yeah. Now that you say that she can pick up other people's fighting styles, I guess that makes sense then.
Like a Mockingbird can pick up the other bird's calls.
So, right, okay.
Yeah, see?
They were talking about her having like perfect recall, you know, a perfect memory and stuff. And that's, I think that they're kind of laying the ground probably in an upcoming episode. We're going to learn all about it, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think it's a great subtle way to do that with an ex-husband saying, yeah, she remembers every little detail. Yeah, that was like awesome.
Yeah.
She's now a regular character, so there's a regular Marvel hero in the series. There's rumors flying around that Iron Man, Tony Stark's supposed to be making, you know, he wants to make one a cameo if nothing else. So maybe, what do you guys think? Where do you think they're headed, especially after these latest episodes? Where do you think they're headed with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? We'll start with you, Tim Coker.
Well, one of the things I have on my little notepad here of what I wanted to say about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is I have no idea where they're going. and I that's hard for me because like I'm pretty good at guessing what's going to happen in narratives, and they've really got me. I have no idea what's going to happen next on this show. And the thing that is kind of thrilling about it for me is that, you know, after taking such a long time to get started, and I'm so invested in all the characters now, I feel like all of the characters are getting something interesting to do in almost every episode, and at least some plot, and it never feels crowded to me. Like, I feel like it's very organic, and I can't predict what's going to happen between these characters and where it's going to go. Like, I don't know what's going to happen with Coulson, although I do want to talk about the writing thing he's doing, because I read some stuff on the internet that makes a lot of sense to me. But rewinding a second, I just think that they're really on fire with the characters. Like, even Bobby is so great, and she's making the Hunter character less irritating to me now, where I kind of am actually willing to call him Hunter and not Special Agent Cheeky Chappie, which is what I had been calling him.
Right.
Because I always feel like, you know, the smart ass English guy is like, with a sad sack story, is like such a cliche, you know, or like such a lazy option for a show like this where you have a group dynamic and you need to liven things up. And oh, it's the English guy, you know. But in the end, having that wife that he went on about be so awesome when she shows up is great. I love that they're not, you know, that there are actually two really formidable ass kicking women on the show. I think that is fantastic.
Yes.
And so needed on TV. And they don't make it feel like you're having to eat your broccoli. Like, it's awesome the way they made it. And I just think it's great. And even the supporting cast, I really missed Kyle MacLachlan this week. I went back and watched, you know, the previous episode again, and there's this great little moment when he's watching Sky and the team go through his office, and he's freaking out as she finds the bodies. And, you know, she calls him a monster, and he says it at the same time, and he's clearly really upset, and it makes him complex or complicated. I don't know who he is, and I don't know where he's going. And that's where I go with that. You know, I just think it's great that the show is getting to such a place with your characters that it doesn't feel like you're watching pieces on a board, you know, in a preordained story. I love having them full on versus Hydra. I think it's way better than the goof of the week last season. Like, that was fine, but it's so focused now, having Hydra be the enemy. I think it's great. And I think that the writing, that the mystery of Coulson's writing is really intriguing to me. And I read some fan speculation, if you guys are interested.
Yes.
Are you interested?
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so.
Well, you know, any Marvel zombie will probably be able to tell you that the creature that the GH drug was taken from was most likely a Kree, right?
Right.
And the Kree are, you know, famous aliens from Marvel. They're the second oldest alien race in the Marvel universe, I mean, in terms of when they were introduced. So they are really deep in the DNA of Marvel. And I was very puzzled by why we didn't get more of them in Guardians of the Galaxy, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is helping me understand. And here's the theory, right? The theory is that, yes, indeed, that is Kree, and that what Special Agent Coulson is writing out is probably something to do with the Terrigen Mist. Now, I got to do some Marvel zombie talk here for Eric because you don't know this stuff.
That's right.
But I'm sure that, you know, you're curious about the Inhumans, whose movie was announced.
Yes.
By Marvel Studios, by Kevin Feige or whatever his name is. Well, here's the deal with the Inhumans. They aren't like the X-Men where they're born with special powers. They're an like a race apart. They're a lost human race that lives like off in the Himalayas in this refuge, and they have a tradition of exposing themselves when they're children to this stuff called Terrigen Mist, and it mutates you and gives you powers. And so they are all like mutants, but they're not mutants, right? And briefly, the Inhumans property is about the royal family of the Inhumans, and they're Fantastic Four characters, and they're great. So, but going back, the Inhumans exist because the Kree, like millions of years ago, came and took some of the apes that were evolving and gave them a little boost and turned them into the Inhumans, basically, and gave them the Terrigen Mist and everything else. And so the idea of this theory is that what Coulson is writing down is the Terrigen Mist, or whatever the formula is, and that it's going to lead into and set up for the Inhumans movie, specifically because Fox is suing Marvel if they ever use the word mutant, and they need some way of having characters get powers other than being zapped by cosmic rays or whatever. Right. So basically, Marvel gets to sort of sow the seeds, we're thinking, for the Inhumans way early, first with Ronan as the Kree, and then with the writing and the ideas that that's going to become more important. You know, is Skye already one of the Inhumans? Or half inhuman or something. We don't know. So that's the
maybe
that's
she's
the
Medusa
theory.
Oh wait, no. Oh baby
I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
So I think that that's like super exciting. And it makes me want to pivot into the whole Marvel versus Fox thing. But let's keep going on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a little bit. Eric, I don't think we've heard as much from you if you have anything.
Before you do, though, one of the things that makes even more sense, real quick here, the fact that the Diviner is something of the Inhumans mythos. The Diviner, that, you know, the obelisk that they're calling it, but Kyle MacLachlan's character called it the Diviner.
Oh, yeah.
That is part of the, you know, Inhumans mythos. So.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So
maybe this could be.
Well, and if you look at the Inhumans comic now, I guess, the masthead, you know, the word Inhuman on the cover has a pattern in the background, and I'm pretty sure it's the same pattern that Coulson's drawing.
I want to check one out now. I'm going to check. Oh, all right. I'm going out of all the Inhumans, I got to tell you, the one bulldog one with the little thing on his forehead is my favorite.
Oh, Lockjaw.
Lockjaw, that's it. Yes, he's my favorite.
I love him so much.
It's like him and Black Bolt together, just awesome. But anyway, all right, Eric, what? Now that you know all these little insides about Inhumans, what do you think? How do you think about
it? I appreciate to have you guys here to guide me through all of this stuff, because I'm so, you know, I'm such a Luddite when it comes to Marvel mythos, but I agree that the earlier you plant these seeds, the more satisfying the payoff is going to be. So I love the slow burn, the long haul, where, you know, you plant some seeds and you don't know where they're going with it till sometimes two or three seasons down the line. And most shows can't get away with that because they're like, well, we don't know how many seasons we're going to get. Well, this is Marvel. They know that they have a blank check from Disney for as long as they want to run this show, because it's not only a good show and getting better, but it's a great press machine for all of Marvel's other properties. It's a win-win situation, so they can go with this as long as they want. And so they're wise in taking their time and planting these seeds. And that sounds, even though I don't know anything about the Inhumans, that totally sounds very likely as what they're doing. And I had heard, even as far back as last season, once we saw briefly the blue alien, that they were the Kree, although at that time I had no idea who the Kree were, but I knew from what I was seeing on the internet it was significant in the Marvel universe. As far as the relationship between Bobby and what's his name, Jason?
Hunter.
Okay, when it was first revealed that this was his ex-wife that he'd been going on and on about, I had to groan a little bit. I was like, because I was worried that they were going to go in the wrong direction with this and that it was just going to become really shticky, but they didn't. Thank God. And I'm really liking the relationship that they have. I love the fact that they're at each other's throats at every moment, except when it counts. And then they're like, as they said in the episode, they fight like a well-oiled machine. That familiarity that they have with each other pays off and makes them an incredible fighting team. So I really, really like that. So, you know, they're doing something with the shtick other than just trying to milk some laughs out of it. So I really like that.
But the one thing, it got some laughs, but it was just perfect timing whenever they were fighting that guy and they had him on the ground and then he starts to raise up and they both shoot him at the same time.
Yeah.
That was perfect. Yeah. It was so awesome. It showed not only, it was a little bit of humor thrown in all of a sudden, but at the same time, well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the kind of big laugh that you would get in an Iron Man movie or something.
Oh, yeah,
you
know? Yeah, uh-huh. Exactly.
It was very consistent with that.
I'm really liking the developing relationship between, you know, Fitz and Simmons, and I'm really curious where that's going to end up. What's her name? Henstridge, the actress that plays her.
Yeah.
Really talented, I think, and I hope they give her a lot to do because I think she's got a really good range if they give her the stuff to do. I liked putting her as the mole in Hydra, although it didn't last as long as I would have liked to seen it, but it gave me a taste of what she could do, you know, and I'm like, okay, let's use her a little more. Hopefully we'll see what they do with her. But now the big question, and this is what I think you were getting, part of what you were getting at, Tim, about the show keeping you guessing, is what they're doing with Agent Ward and his brother, the congressman. I kept bouncing back and forth during the entire episode saying, okay, who's telling the truth here? Who should we believe? I wanted to believe Agent Ward because he's the devil we know as opposed to the devil we don't know. I completely don't trust his brother. But then, of course, at the end of the episode, he busts out of captivity and is like, okay, well, what's he doing now? It's just everything's up in the air now. It's like, okay, what's this mean for I'm really anxious to see the next episode and find out where this is going to go.
You know, I'm right there with you. And my wife had a really interesting thought because we rolled the episode again, actually, today, like this morning while we were having breakfast. And, you know, at the end, she says, does Coulson know he's going to escape? And if you think about it, mm-hmm. I don't know. It has to occur to him that Ward could escape, you know, but he's just in a pair of handcuffs.
Right.
Like, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, we'll put you in these handcuffs. Yeah, no, we took the fur off of them. These are our Spencer Gifts handcuffs, you know? I mean, what are you doing? You know, it's Grant Ward. He's Sergeant Killbot, man. You know, you put this guy in a Hannibal Lecter, you know, gurney outfit, mm-hmm. you know, put him on the, wrap him mm-hmm. up and put him on the dolly with a face mask.
Oh, I know. That's what I kept thinking the whole time. They're just walking him out, leisurely stroll. It's like, no, wait a minute. No.
You may have a point there.
Yeah.
Well, either that or it's idiot plotting and we have to just look the other way.
No, I don't see that happening.
Well, I think that it lends credence to your theory or your wife's theory that in the scene before they take him, we see Coulson just being completely stonewalling him, just saying, you know, reading him the riot act and, you know, we'll never trust you and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, we know that Coulson, that they've been keeping him there for the very fact that they needed to pump him for information. Obviously, Coulson has trusted him, or at least trusted Skye to get, you know, the truth out of him. So it felt very showy to me.
Yeah.
So and you know, once you said what yours and Teresa's theory was, it's like, oh, okay. Then that would make a little more sense because it felt very showy to me.
Yeah. I wonder about it.
I didn't even think about that. I mean, for me as a viewer, I was like thinking he's Ward. He's going to get it. I mean, but now that you think that, oh, man, yeah, add another depth to it. Now I got to think about it even harder.
Because they've gotten what they wanted from his brother, haven't they? I mean, basically, his brother's already committed to saying, okay, you know, the Shield's okay, and the Hydra is the bad guys. That's who we need to be, you know, focusing our efforts on. So Coulson's gotten what he wanted out of that relationship. So why not let Ward out and see where he's going? I'm sure that if that was his plan, they've got, you know, something got him bugged or they've got some way of tracking him. And yeah, there's a lot of possibilities there. It's interesting. It's a good theory.
You know, I got to rewind too. You were talking about Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I'm a little bit, I don't think this is the thing where I'm observing an interaction between fictional characters and trying to referee it. But, you know, I don't think she deserves all the grief that, you know, the new guy was giving her, because for God's sake, I mean, she's been Fitz's, you know, best friend practically since they were kids, you know?
Yeah.
And it has to be hard for her to see that. And of course it's hard for her to see it. I think that he's got a valid point, you know, that she needs to adjust, but come on, she's only human and he's her best friend. And, you know, anyway, so.
Right. But I mean, it didn't feel out of place though. And she had a good, you know, she had a good comeback and she yeah. stood up for herself. But the new guy, none of us can remember his name, but I mean, he's been spending all this time with Fitz because no one else will spend time with him. And, mm-hmm. and he's gotten to know, you know, Fitz better than anyone else short of Simmons. So he's really in Fitz's camp. And so I understand where he's coming from by, you know, by kind of calling her on the carpet. But of course, he doesn't know the full picture. He doesn't know their relationship. All he knows is what he's seen the relationship doing to Fitz. And yeah, so I mean, they're all coming from a good place, but yeah, they don't have the complete picture. And yeah, it's an interesting, complex relationship. I'm really curious how it's going to end up. And I, you know, I'm so tired of seeing poor Fitz. Just the kid's got to get a break at some point.
Well, you know what it is sometime this season, I swear, sometime this season, there's going to be an opportunity for Fitz to get his brain fixed. But at a terrible cost.
Yes.
That's what I've been saying from the beginning. Yes, yeah. I'm sure.
And I feel like that they're just turning the screws on the poor Fitz feelings so that when it comes down to it and the terrible cost is revealed, we're going to be legitimately conflicted about whether the cost is really that terrible if we get our old Fitz back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's going to be, yeah, I have a feeling you're right. You know, I think it's, I mean, completely side note here. I think it's kind of cool that the character that's replacing Simmons, this guy, his actual name, you know, it's Henry Simmons. The actor's name is Henry Simmons.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So
what's the character's name?
Gosh, you do have to ask me that. Alfonso McKenzie,
okay.
Yeah, and in case you're curious, I had to look this up after the last episode. It was just bugging the crap out of me, and I'm like, okay, where have I seen this guy before? And it was NYPD Blue. I used to be a big fan of that show. And he was one of the detectives on NYPD Blue. Can't remember which character he replaced, but he was like in the latter part of the run of that series. But yeah, he's playing actually kind of the same part, just trying to get answers out of the suspect there. But yeah, it's funny, as I looked it up, I'm like, Simmons, what? That's cool.
Awesome.
So now we got a name for Mac. It's Henry Simmons is the actor, so we can praise him because he's doing a pretty good job of trying to pull stuff out of Fitz.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm wondering, one of the things that we're talking about, you know, talking about how it's going to, it looks like it's possibly tying into the Inhumans, but also the Guardians of the Galaxy. I've always wondered, you know, why didn't they put anything Guardians of the Galaxy into the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. yet? And then I realized, well, that movie didn't take place on Earth. So it's like, okay, that's way out in outer space, you know, that happens. So that's why that hasn't happened here yet. And eventually the Guardians will be here and helping out.
Well, they've already said that the Guardians, probably not till Avengers 3, but they are going to eventually, they're going to meet the Avengers. And once that happens, I assume that's going to happen on Earth. Then, of course, that will at least get some, at least lip service, if something more in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because everything that happens in the Marvel Universe has repercussions in every other part of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know that we will ever see Rocket Raccoon on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, that'd be cool, though. Or Groot, actually.
I would love it.
Yeah. I have a feeling if we see anybody, it'll be Star-Lord.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to another TV series. We got the choice of... Here's your choices, and I'll let you guys pick which one to talk about first. We've got Gotham, we've got The Flash, we've got Arrow, we've got Supernatural, we've got Grimm, and we've got Constantine. Which one do you guys want to tackle next?
Well, do we have time for all of those?
No. No, not at all.
All right. Let's do Constantine, because that'll be short, because there's only been two episodes.
Let's do that, because I want to talk about that one. Tim, you haven't watched this one yet, have you?
I have not, and I will probably have questions. Okay. So go.
Okay, it's good. Okay, that's it.
All right. So you like it, Gil?
Yes, I do, actually.
All right.
And not having read the whole, I mean, I think I read maybe three or four Hellblazer comics, and, you know, again, that was like, what, 20 years ago, maybe? I liked them, but I don't know why. I just never picked up on them and kept reading them. I think at the time I was heavy. Wow, I think it was heavy into Witchblade and what was the other Darkness?
Lady Death.
Not so much Lady Death, but the Darkness. That other Top Cow Image comic. Yeah. He had the alternate power of Witchblade. So I think I went off in that direction at that time. So, but anyway, so I didn't really read much, but I do remember a little bit, and it was definitely not like that Keanu movie. Because when I saw that, I'm like, oh, I read this comic. This will be cool. What? Okay, move on. Yeah, and so the TV series, luckily it was Halloween night that they had their second episode, and it made for a perfect Halloween episode. But starting out with the first one, the humor that I remember, which was very dark humor and just, you know, just enough to keep you interested, they had a little bit of that in there. The guy is real snarky, and they open up with him in a mental institution. I couldn't quite pinpoint why he was there, other than he wanted someone else to tell him that what was happening wasn't real.
He checked himself in. He was there. He said at the very beginning that he checked himself in.
Yeah, but
because this is right after Astra, right after Astra.
Yeah.
Astra.
And yeah. I think he was wanting someone to tell him that it wasn't real or something, and then he walks in and this lady's possessed by a demon, writing stuff on the wall, and boom. He's back into action, especially with all the cockroaches. When one of the things happened, big hole in the ground, the angel comes up and says, there's a battle waging, and it's going to be for his soul. They set it up really well in the first episode. The idea that in the second episode, where it was a miner's town and a local... the first episode, they had a woman wield this little amulet thing, and the blood drops from her hand went on down the amulet and then went on a map of the U.S. and pinpointed all these places in the U.S. that are going to have demon troubles. And so that's where you can tell the episode by episode is going to be happening. But there's going to be one big story to tell, apparently. And the first episode happens in Pennsylvania in a coal mine, and a local gypsy has raised these spirits of the coal miners to shut down the mine. I will say that it was creepy, and I love the whole idea. I mean, everything you talk about coal mines, you always hear about the Tommy knockers or the knocking whenever there's right before a mine problem. They worked that mythos in, and I thought that was kind of cool, like a little common Tommy knockers. Cool. To me, that episode reminded me a lot of Supernatural. I'm just going to put it out there. It reminded me a lot of Supernatural. Now, granted, Hellblazer comics were out way before Supernatural TV show was, but the episode by episode of little urban legends, that's what I'm trying to get at, the urban legends. It's that each one he's going to battle an urban legend. It's like, uh-oh, we've seen this before. You better get better than this. It's got me worried on that aspect. It's well done, good humor, good comic book type format, but it could turn into something that we've already seen. So, Eric, you take it from there.
Well, I've only seen two seasons of Supernatural, and it's really on my... I really, really want to get back to watching and get caught up. It'll take me a long time to get caught up because it's, what, on season 10 now?
Yeah, but it will be the final seasons.
Right, okay. But I would be very surprised if the writers of Supernatural had not read some Hellblazer. It's possible that didn't. But yes, there's a lot of similarity there, and I don't think that they're going to be able to escape the comparisons, but hopefully they will be able to carve out a niche of their own. Now, I've been thinking about when I started reading the Swamp Thing and then Hellblazer comics that Tim got me into. And let me just give this caveat to our listeners here, not to roast me because I was a little misguided back then. I really didn't like superhero comics, and I couldn't take them seriously, I think. And I had this discussion. I remember vaguely having this discussion with Tim. I liked horror comics, and I was reading some Sandmans at the time, and which I would love to, I really want to get back and read some more Sandman. But anyway, I was talking to Tim about this, and I think he picked up on that and said, well, you know, there's these DC comics called Hellblazer, or I think you started me actually reading Swamp Thing, and you told me that, you know, they were very adult and very dark and not, you know, not kiddie at all, and you were right. I mean, I just immediately took to these comics and the character, and I want to go back and read them now, because it's been 20 something years, and I only have these vague recollections. But the character of Constantine, or Constantine, although they do call him Constantine in the show, or at least the girl from the last episode does, the character, the actor that they got to play this guy is dead on. I can't imagine a better actor to play this character. I mean, he is much of the time a right bastard, and I mean that in the best possible way, because the character should be a bastard.
Yeah, that's him.
Absolutely. In fact, the one thing that makes me cringe a little bit is when I feel I'm getting too sentimental and too emotionally involved, because I said, no, that doesn't feel right. This character, even though he may feel that, you can't show that, because he's got this tough exterior that he puts off like 99.9% of the time. And that's the one thing that I don't want them to do, and I'm afraid that they might bend to it, and I hope they don't. But the character the writers know who this character is. Whether they stay true to it or not is the big question. My big complaint, and I guess it's not even worth complaining because it's never going to change, and I should have known better than to expect this, but this immediate transplant to America. I don't understand why everything has to be in America, okay? I mean, we have these co-productions now of, like, Hannibal is a co-production between a bunch of European conglomerates and NBC. There's been other shows that are financed the exact same way, and they take place, some of them, like, there's one that's got William Fichtner in it. But anyway, it takes place in Europe. So it's like this can be done. It didn't have to be transplanted to Atlanta. It could have taken place in Europe. But anyway, it is what it is. And I can only hope that maybe every now and then they will do an episode that's set in Europe. They don't necessarily have to go there to film it. We all know that. They could film it here and double, you know, there are places that they could double for England or whatever. But he needs to be in England at least sometimes. Wouldn't you agree, Tim?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's like, yeah, well, it would be like if they were making a Superman show and they had him set. Okay, it's not quite as bad as having, like, Superman set in, like, London, you know, but because, you know, Constantine, he lives all over the place. But, you know, I mean, when I think about it, there needs to be frequent visits to London, because a lot of his old England in general, mm-hmm. because a lot of his old contacts are back there, and that's his milieu, you know.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll be able to credibly start sending him back, because here and there, you know, because it after a while, I think the fish out of water thing would have to, you know, start to wear thin, you know.
Yeah. Well, the way they got it set up with that map with little blood dot, look like it anytime soon.
Okay. I know. I'm just hoping, but yeah, you know. We'll have to wait and see what happens, but yeah, the character is very dark and has this really, you know, kind of perverse sense of humor, and that's great. That's dead on. The girl who's introduced in the first episode, I don't know if that was like the pilot they shot and then she couldn't do it, or they decided they didn't like her, but anyway, they had her building up like she was going to be his quote unquote companion.
Yeah.
And then she took off at the end of the episode and she'd had enough or whatever. And then this episode, they introduce a brand new girl who apparently is going to be his traveling companion, and I don't know that I necessarily like that idea. If they had her as a recurring character now and then, that's fine, but it's just the second episode. I'll have to sit back and see what they do with her. But the character, I was telling Gil, the jury's still out. I'm curious about her because she's not what you might expect, and she's not the typical pretty face. I mean, she's a good looking girl, but she's an odd duck, and I don't know if, you know, where she's coming from or how, where they're going with this angle, but it makes me interested to see more what they're going to do with her.
Yeah.
But she's kind of I forgot what he called her, but she can draw pictures and she can see things in her mind of things that have happened or are happening. So she's a valuable tool to Constantine. So I can see why he will, you know, yeah, acquiesce to having her with him, but how that relationship's going to work, I don't know. Like I said, it would be a huge mistake to make him too sentimental, but if he's got this young girl that's traveling with, or she's not a young girl, but a young woman who's traveling with him, it seems like that's the path that they're going to wind up getting on. And God forbid that they make him romantically involved with her, because yeah, that just would be all wrong.
Well, but, one thing I got to point out here, and I thought this was kind of neat. I mean, when they showed her, cause she was drawing these pictures of him over and over and over and over and like bazillions of them in her studio, if you will, I guess that's what it was. Anyway, they pan out and they show all these drawings of him. I swear some of those drawings were comic covers from the Constantine Constantine series.
That's
I don't know for sure. If so, that's ingenious that they did that, because it kind of let you know that they still, you know, they said, yeah, we know it's a comic book, you know, that kind of nod. But some of them, I mean, they looked exactly like a comic book cover, and they looked very familiar. And again, I'm not being humongously familiar with Constantine. They looked familiar, like I'd seen him on the rack at a comic book store or something like that. So I thought that was a really good nod if that's what they did.
Now, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up, and Tim, I don't know if you can remember or not, but I got the distinct impression, or at least I seem to remember, that Constantine was irrevocably damned. He was hoping that he would find some way out of his damnation, but there was no indication that he was ever going to be anything but damned when he died. Am I wrong about that?
I'm pretty sure that's the case. Again, it's kind of funny, you know, all of us middle-aged guys who are talking about comics we read 20 years ago, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. Yeah, and then there's a storyline where he gets, there's this demon Nergal and he gets his blood in his veins or something, or anyway, he has like his essence in him, and then that changes the whole game for him. Anyway, yeah, but I think at the earlier point, whether he's damned or not, I think he at least believes that he is.
Right.
So yeah, well, I don't know if they're not doing that on the show.
Well, I seem to remember that he would have these arguments with the angel that you know, about the angel. He would be like, well, what if I did this? You know, would this? And the angel thought, no, you're damned, but you might as well try and do some good while you're alive. But yeah. The angel basically said, he didn't say that, I forgot what he said exactly, but basically he implied that Constantine could save himself from damnation, which kind of changes the dynamic of the thing. And I like it better if Constantine believes that he is irrevocably damned, but he doesn't stop trying anyway. Whereas if this carrot's being dangled in front of his face and that's his motivation for doing good, then that changes things, and I don't necessarily find that as interesting. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Definitely.
Let me point out something here on the IMDb page for Constantine. they've got him listed on 8 episodes. So apparently there's 8 episodes in the can, ready to go. Chaz is in all 8 episodes as well, the taxi driver. Mm. The new artist lady, Zed.
Yes, Zed.
She'll be in 7 episodes. So she wasn't in the first one, but she's going to be right in all the remaining episodes.
Yeah, and she's in the comics, I think.
Okay.
So okay.
It's Zed, the artist, is what Zed Martin. Papa Midnight is going to be in 3 episodes, which is, he's going to make his appearance this next week.
Right.
But I want to say this, and this just reminded me when I went on the IMDb page to look at this. Manny, the angel,
yeah,
played by Harold Perrineau. I loved him in Lost.
Lost, yeah.
I loved him in Lost. And when I saw him in this, I was like, it's going to be hard for me to picture him trying to protect his boy. But no, he's going to get, maybe Constantine is his boy, so he's protecting him. But yeah, so knowing that Zed is going to be in 7 episodes out of the remaining episode is going to be in all of them. But Chaz, on the side note there, I like that character. He was cool. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the mythos behind him, but the fact that he had an electrical wire impale through his body and then he came back just a couple hours like nothing happened. It's like, that's cool.
I always love Chaz in the comics. So, but he's obviously an American cabbie in the show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't say governor.
Yeah. So, such is life.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're in for a good adventure across the states, at least for a little while.
Yeah. I but a man can hope.
Well, it makes sense. If the show keeps going, hopefully they'll find a reason to do that, because it would just be too good not to do, you know, at least once or twice. I don't know. That's just me complaining. I guess my question is, because you guys are much, much more like horror guys than I am. I mean, I love a good horror movie, but like Gil, I know you watch like tons of horror movies, and Eric, mm-hmm. I've seen your DVD list.
You know,
so fan, yeah, and I know about that stuff. So as horror guys, you know, what do you think of this show and the promise it has for that? Because like when the Hellblazer comics and those Swamp Thing comics were new, they really, for me, really like pushed way farther on the envelope of comfort than anything I'd like really seen at that point, because I was pretty sheltered, you know. But like there's that Swamp Thing where Abby, you know, thinks she's being demonically possessed by her crazy uncle, and she like uses that wire brush and scrubs away at her skin, and it's horrible. And you know, all these like really horrific things, like the junkie guy who's injecting like bugs into himself, you know, and all this stuff. Like, is it kind of imaginatively horrific like that?
I think so. Now, yeah. I will say that the mining community thing, that was kind of, like I said, more along the lines of an urban legend type scary. And mm-hmm. now, one side note is they did, speaking of you know, the United Kingdom here, that was a Welsh-based town. They were all Welsh miners and a Welsh family. They had, in fact, they had the Welsh flag on the back of the bar, you know, the green with the red dragon thing. So, I mean, they did that. But yeah, that one seemed like, again, like Supernatural. The first couple seasons of Supernatural were all just basically chasing urban legends. And that's the way that one felt, the second episode with the mining, spirits of the miners coming back. But the first episode I thought was extremely creepy. Now, I don't know what it is, but every movie that has bugs in it like that, massive amounts of cockroaches crawling on a wall to spell out words, That's creepy. And they had on the first episode. And
then there was the girl's friend whose neck was completely snapped, and that was pretty
horrific. Yeah, and then she's still moving, and that was pretty along the lines of watching a zombie on Walking Dead. Creepy. Yeah.
Right.
But so the first episode, yeah. The second episode was more of an urban legend type thing, but...
It actually reminded me of The Fog. John Carpenter's The Fog.
Quality.
It's been a while since I've seen that one. Well, and then the next one here, they're supposed to, I'm thinking, well, Papa Midnight, I'm thinking that one's going to be in New Orleans. It's going to be a voodoo-based one, and that's going to be creepy, too, if that's the case. I'm thinking it's something to do with voodoo. The title's called The Devil's Vinyl, which,
Well, the producers have promised that this is going to be pushing the boundaries as far as gore and violence.
Cool.
And honestly, the first episode might have been a little more shocking if I hadn't already seen two or three seasons of Hannibal on NBC, which, you know, really has pushed the envelope as far as graphic violence goes. It's every time I watch an episode of that, I'm shocked at how graphic it is and how they can get away with this on network television. So as far as that goes, Constantine has a lot of catching up to do.
Well, let me ask you this. Fourth episode of the season, which will air November 14th, his old friend Gary Lester accidentally releases a demon in Atlanta. Now, is Gary Lester in the comics?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so... Again, middle-aged men 20 years ago.
Yeah, right.
I know.
Well, you're going to make me get out my old books, though.
I know, right?
Yeah, I'm like thinking right now, it's like, I wonder how much compendium of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing would cost me.
Well, see, and that's another thing. Alan Moore created Hellblazer, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So there. I mean, right there alone, based on Alan Moore's history, they've got a great resource. They need to, hopefully, they're going back and forth with him saying, is this okay to use this one?
Oh, no. I'm sure he's not involved at all. Really? Alan Moore is like so.
Yeah, he's so a like
he's ex- well. He's very, very like negative about the idea of any of his stuff being filmed.
Oh, is that right?
And he wants nothing to do with movies of any kind. Like, he's really diehard about it. So he doesn't want his name on it. And he says, you know, his money, just give it to the other guy, you know, like the artist. Because usually it'll be created by, you know, Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons or whatever.
Okay.
And for Constantine, since that's like he created that for DC, you know, they own him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure he has no real title to him anymore. So
okay.
He was a supporting character, right, in Swamp Thing, okay, and he was really important for a few. Well, probably for a long time, but he really came into his own on his own book, you know, Hellblazer.
Mm-hmm.
And the first writer on that was Jamie Delano, I think. And it would be great if the showrunners are talking to him, because to me, I feel like he was the one that really defined, instead of being a cool character, making Swamp Thing stories more awesome, to actually figure out, well, who is this guy? Because when the book was coming out, I thought it was a mistake because I loved him so much as a mysterious guy you don't know anything about. And I give those guys huge credit for making, when the curtain's pulled aside and you find out who he really is, it was really interesting. And if they get, you know, John Constantine as a really interesting guy, the same kind of complexity and unpredictability and everything on the show, then that would be great.
Here's an idea. Mm-hmm. And this is one good thing that could possibly come out of them having this set in the U.S. Do you think there's a possibility we might see the Swamp Thing pop up at some point in the show?
Oh, that would be great.
And only if they get, what was the guy's name that did it in the TV series? I've got the entire run of the TV series.
There was a TV series?
Swamp Thing, yeah.
Not know that.
Back in the 80s. Adrienne Barbeau was in it.
In the movie?
In the movie that led to the series. And then, and the same guy that went on from the movie into the TV series, too, so that played the Swamp Thing. I've got the entire run, including the movie.
Wasn't it Ray Wise?
Is that the name? That sounds familiar.
Who played Ray, Leland Palmer.
You're going to have to make me look it up, I guess.
Ray Wise was Swamp Thing?
I thought he was.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to have to look it up now. But while I'm looking that up, I wanted to say, Gary Lester, I looked it up. He is in DC Comics from New Earth. And there's a funny line in this write-up about Gary Lester's history as it relates to Constantine, or not as it relates to Constantine, but it says in here, he was a friend of John Constantine's, and him and John Constantine attended a Sex Pistols concert together at the Roxy in London. How about that? And they had that.
Awesome.
And they had there was a discussion in the TV, on the episode, or one of the episodes about who was better, the Sex Pistols or the Ramones.
It was Ray Wise. Dr. Alec Holland, Ray Wise.
Oh, my God. My brain's going to melt right out my ears.
Wes Craven did that movie. Holy crap, I forgot about that.
Oh, I did too, yeah.
Yeah, Ray Wise.
Every teenage boy who saw that movie remembers one scene better than anything.
You talking about the bathing in the swamp scene?
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, actually, the guy that played the monster, the swamp thing himself, was Dick Durock. That's who I was starting to think of, Dick Durock. Oh, okay. He was the monster. He went on to play it in the TV series as well. So,
So Ray Wise didn't wear the makeup.
No.
No.
He was just the doctor before. All right. And Dick Durock, a big guy. But yeah, Dick Durock went on to play him in the TV series as well. But maybe they will. And they'll get Dick Durock if he's still alive. If not, then get Ray Wise. He's still around. Okay, you guys are constantly talking about Swamp Thing. I read a few issues of Swamp Thing, but my favorite, and being the Make Mine Marvel all the time, Man Thing. Do you guys ever read any of those comics? Because that, to me, I thought he was better than Swamp Thing. I mean, they're both same looking guys, but
yeah, and I think that they appeared like for the first time the same month or something ridiculous. Like it actually was a coincidence. It's like they were almost simultaneously created, and I don't know why, but yeah, Well, the great thing about Man Thing, obviously, like the best thing about him is the title of the first comic he was in, which is Giant Size Man Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing filthy about that.
No. You want to see my giant sized man thing?
Oh my God. Well, anyway, go on.
With that was that's the series that created Howard the Duck too. So
yeah,
can't be
true.
All wrong.
No, well, yeah, Man Thing was cool.
Well, I remember reading an issue or two after Alan Moore stopped writing Swamp Thing, mm-hmm. and it did not have the same appeal. So I never read Man Thing, but I would put any of the Alan Moore Swamp Things, because I mean, I remember just dearly loving those stories and the way that it was written.
Man Thing was a cool Marvel horror comic, but Swamp Thing was when Alan Moore showed up and just basically rewrote the rule book for American comic books. I mean, like it's in a whole other class, you know, I mean, just as far as like what it means and historically. But Man Thing is great. And, you know, he's got to show up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something, because I love that guy.
Well, you know, and anyway. Just a side note here. Look, I was looking up Man Thing real quick. Above the title of the comic, underneath the Marvel Comics group, there's a little banner that reads, "The most startling swamp creature of all." A little bit of competition going there.
It's a long list.
Yeah. Well, let's close out Constantine. I'm going to say Constantine because that's the way they say it on TV.
Yeah. No, seriously, if we're talking about the show, just say Constantine because that's the difference. Constantine is the print character in Constantine.
Yeah, there you go. And
you guys are allowed.
Well, I think also the TV series was going to go into, you know, of course, different directions, but they're going to incorporate much like all other TV versions of comic books go. They'll incorporate the originals somehow, some way, but they'll change it up just enough to keep it on TV, I guess. I think Constantine is going to be a good series. It's got the horror aspect that I like. It's got the comic book based material, which I like. And like Eric said, the actor playing John Constantine is he's got that. He's very brash. Him and the new doctor, Peter Capaldi, would get along, in other words.
Huh, excellent.
So, all right, well, let's move on. What else is there to talk about? I'm really losing interest in Gotham, other than the actor playing Bruce Wayne and the Penguin. Although Alex Saez, the guy playing the minor mobster that's Penguin's working for.
Oh, Zayas.
Zayas, yeah.
Who was on Dexter.
Yeah. And I loved him in Dexter, and in this, he's got like a completely different opposite role. You know, the smart mobster guy. If there is that an oxymoron? Anyway, I like his role and his character. I'm really just, I'm totally hate, and I'm with you on this, or, well, okay, maybe I'm not with you on this, Tim, but I'm seeing what you're talking about. I'm getting tired of Fish. And
there, yeah, she's overstaying her welcome. She's a little too much Fish, yes.
Yeah, and it's like, come on.
The show's a little too fishy.
I knew that pun was coming from someone.
Yeah.
But I'm just not liking her. It's rubbing me the wrong way. Again, there's another Fish reference.
Yeah. I lost interest in that show too. I mean, I think that I could well be proved wrong, and maybe, you know, I'm gonna be convinced that when the season's over, I should just, you know, binge it and see, you know, and enjoy it. But so far, it's just kind of frustrating for me. Like, there are things I like in it, mm-hmm. but it just doesn't add up to enough for me. I think that the thing that it really sums up. There was a great article on Comics Alliance pointing out that for Halloween, the makers of the Gotham show had put out on their website, they had these printable Halloween masks, you know, so you could print it out and cut it out and put it on your face, you know. But, you know, as the guy in the article put it, you know, what are the characters? Like sad little girl, cop with mustache? You know, no. It's like, it's the Penguin and the Riddler and Catwoman and all these characters that are not on the show. The only character from the show that they had a mask for was Fish Mooney, and it's like, oh wow, boy, I really want to wear a Fish Mooney mask, you know. But as the guy put it, and I thought this was really well put, yeah, then you can, you know, so if you're a Gotham fan, go ahead and cut these masks out and put them on and try to convince people that October 30th is just as October 31st. And I was I doff my cap to that guy, because that pretty much sums it up for me. I just can't care.
I gave it a chance, or give it, I'm still giving it a chance, I guess, because it's still being recorded. But I'm just kind of bored. It's plain and simple. I just get kind of bored with it. It's like, oh, cool, there's the Penguin. All right. That's it.
Well, right. I thought it was interesting that I remember our friend Peter posting on Facebook about Gotham, that he's like, oh, this sounds about as interesting as a show about, you know, Krypton before Superman was born. Well, guess what? That's in the works. Oh, no. I saw something that's seriously in the works.
Oh, my God.
All right. You guys, Gil, you haven't seen yesterday's episode of Gotham, have you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I'm halfway through it. I was watching it before the podcast. It's really good. I mean, really good.
You can't trick me.
No, I'm serious. It's full of action. Victor Zsasz shows up, and it's okay.
The knife
basically
guy?
I don't know the details of the characters, but I know Victor Zsasz is a name that I recognize from the DC universe. It's like,
yeah,
Zsasz or something like that. Bald guy with no eyebrows. He shows up looking for Jim Gordon. Basically, the crap has hit the fan because Penguin, Cobblepot, shows up, and they've arrested Jim Gordon at the end of last episode for the murder of Oswald Cobblepot, and have taken him in. And about the time he walks in and says, "Hi, I'm Oswald Cobblepot." That's where the episode ended. Well, they picked up with this one. Now that everyone knows that Cobblepot is alive, Fish Mooney wants Jim Gordon's head and Harvey Bullock's, because that was, you know, who her main contact was, and they basically screwed her over. So her and her men and the Falcone's men are out for Jim Gordon. They were waiting for it at his apartment, holding his woman hostage, and anyway, he winds up getting back to the police station, and this Victor Zsasz shows up and says, you know, I want Jim Gordon. And Gordon's like, you're in a police station with 50 officers. And Zsasz is like, everyone leave. And of course, everyone walks out, and they have a gunfight. Gordon gets shot in the side, and that's where I stopped watching it. But it's really exciting and actually really good, and the character work. I like the guys playing Jim Gordon anyway, but they're really giving him a lot to do in this episode, and you know, things are coming to a head. So yeah, I'm really liking this episode a lot.
All right, maybe I'll give it one more episode, but it's
maybe,
yeah, if I got nothing better to do. I don't know, I just got bored with it. That I guess it was the episode where what's his name, Zsasz character, I can't remember the character's name. Anyway, where he was like trying to confirm that Oswald Cobblepot was who he said he was by bringing Jim Gordon in, and I'm like, this is kind of dumb. So that one just kind of was like the final straw. So, all right, maybe one episode. We'll see. I'll tell you what I am enjoying is The Flash. And there's only one reason.
It's a quality show.
Yeah. There's only one reason I'm enjoying it. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, they got the saving the world. He's not doing it. We've talked about it before. He's not doing it because he's seeking revenge. You know, all these other good things. He's doing it. Now, he is trying to solve a crime of who murdered his mom, of course, but that's going to be a good, cool, long story. But it's not a revenge issue. But they're writing good superhero comics. You know, and into a TV series. And it's like, well, you know, in the 90s version of the Flash TV series, that was a lot of fun, but they got a little bit, I don't know, they strayed from the comics a little bit, but they still had fun with it with the primary colors. I think that's where they focused on, was the primary colors in the series. But this one, it's like they're still having fun. It's a superhero from Central City. I mean, it's fun. That's why. See, fun. That's all I need.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is. And sometimes I wonder, like, if the show is written for little kids, because, like, sometimes it's really literal, like the whole thing about, yeah, I was running, but I wasn't fast enough, and, you know, all these of really heavy-handed things, you know. But it is a fun show, and I think one thing that I give them credit for is that the villains are pretty cool, and that is, like, I think it's been a problem on Arrow, and that a lot of the villains, like, Slade was all right, but a lot of the villains have not been that compelling on Arrow. Like, I'm thinking of the Vertigo guys, you know, and I feel like they've actually been going with the comic book thing, and these superpowered villains they've had on the Flash show have all been pretty good, pretty formidable, and well rendered, you know, like they look good. They it's all right, you know, so basically I like that.
Yeah, and the guy that works with Star Labs, the guy, he's constantly naming them. That's,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
and Cisco. That's so fun. Yeah, Cisco, yeah. It's so fun when he comes up with them.
And it was, you know, it's kind of weird, but it's kind of fun to see Felicity Smoke show up, you know, in Central City. Although I've got to ask, every time Felicity has to dress up, like, my wife and I both think, like, what hooker store does she buy her dresses at? Honestly, it's almost like they're really overdoing her being a nerdy girl who doesn't know how to dress up, and so she buys something at the hooker store, because Felicity's dresses are always insane. And Gil, am I right?
Yeah, oh yeah, very, especially that last night. That's that one especially. I was like, holy crap, did you miss half the dress?
So. Yeah, you know, you look at her come in, and you know, and Iris is all like, ooh, you look great. And I'm thinking, yeah, but guys are going to be pulling their cars over and asking her how much, you know? Yeah.
Well, it's like the opposite of Pretty Woman when she went shopping with, you know, shopping and got the expensive clothes. And she, Felicity Smoke's going to the store where Pretty Woman used to shop at.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
I'm with you. And you know what? It happens on Arrow a lot where she'll have a very conservative outfit on, but whenever they have to go to some event, it's those clothes. So
yeah,
she does that in Arrow as well, so it's weird. Maybe it's
like with the power girl boob window on her dresses, she gets that a lot, you know.
Well, maybe, you know, maybe that's the rating seeking moments.
Guys, they want her to be they want all the nerds to crush on her, but you know, I honestly, she doesn't really seem credibly nerdy to me.
No.
Like I feel like they style her as too kind of pretty and glamorous, but I don't know. I don't really care about that as much, because she's at least a hopeful character on a show that's pretty dour.
Well, I don't think she's going to be making too many more appearances on Flash, so I think that was
Look like it.
Yeah, I think that's like the final tie-in or something, maybe. But yeah, on Arrow, it's the same way, but she... Yeah, it was kind of a neat way to cross over. And, you know, if they do that with all these TV series, all these DC-based TV series, with a little more crossover, actually more of a heroic crossover, like maybe the Arrow helps the Flash on his show, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that could actually be a lot more fun, because crossovers are one of the cool parts of comics. I mean,
I'd be into that.
Yeah, my very first comic that I had to have and own was the Superman versus Spider-Man thing back in the 70s. Was it a giant? I'm pretty sure it was a giant size issue.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, that was a Marvel DC crossover, but that was right there. I had to have that. And if you read the story, they really they amped up Spider-Man's powers more than what normal, so just so he could compete with Superman, I guess. But still, the crossover in comics is what they all know. That's what sells comics, is crossovers. And if they can if they can do some hero crossovers in the TV series, just Flash and Arrow alone would be fine. I mean, I don't see how they could really do it with Gotham, but I'm sure they'd find a way.
Time travel, maybe.
Yeah. Well, the Flash can go fast, so maybe, you know, there have been time travel issues of the Flash. But I don't know. If they can do that more often, that'd be great, but just more the heroes, not Felicity Smoke. Heck, I'd even be happy with Diggle coming over.
That'd be cool. It'd be interesting to see him in a different environment.
Yeah.
But I want to say about time travel, that's right there in the first episode. You know, okay, this is the thing. The doctor guy in the wheelchair, the professor. Is it just me, or does it seem like people should be noticing how totally evil he seems? Or is it only because we've seen him kill a dude? But anyway, in the first episode, you see him looking at the future newspaper thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's a time traveler of some kind.
Well, I have a feeling he's Mr. Zoom, the yellow Flash. Yeah. I have a feeling that's who he is. That might be leading you onto the spoilers part. I don't know.
Yeah.
But because they're almost hitting you in the face with it, especially when they showed that newspaper from the future.
Well, so much so that it makes you wonder if it's something else entirely, and that they're, you know, it's a red herring. You know what I mean? Like with the reveal of, never mind, I'm not going to say it, because it's about Doctor Who episodes that Eric hasn't seen.
Oh, well, I think he stopped listening.
No,
he didn't. Yeah.
I can't believe I'm guilting you like this, Eric. I'm so guilty of this myself on different occasions.
Well, finally, you know, it's two of us against one that's not caught up.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm caught up on almost everything else.
You need to be watching The Flash because it's pure comic book fun.
Right.
Okay. Gotham, I'm bored with. Tim, you gave up on it. Eric still says it's a go. So that one's up in the air, I guess. It's got to be
come back and tell me what you think of this new episode. All right. I think you'll like it.
All right. I'll watch this new episode. And then now Doctor Who. Now, was this last episode? Was that the finale?
No, there's one more.
One more? Okay, good. Because I was hoping they didn't leave us hanging that much.
Right.
So yeah, the finale coming up, you got to watch that. You should be watching Doctor Who anyway. And if you're an old school Doctor Who fan, you're really going to love the directions they're going with this, with Peter Capaldi as the Doctor. If you're an old school fan, you need to come back to this one. If you're one of those that like, you know, the cute guy being the Doctor, well, I'm afraid they're not going that direction. No. But it's still great writing. And if you're any kind of a Doctor Who nerd at all, you need to be watching it. So, let's see here. And to sum up on the movie side of things, Big Hero 6 coming out. Go see it. Any other movies coming out that you guys think we should be getting ready to watch?
I live under a rock. I have no idea.
I was thinking the Hunger Games next one, but I'm not that excited about seeing it. The movies.
I still haven't seen the second one.
I haven't either. I haven't either. It's not big on my list. However, like I said, the Eagle Theater here in town is going to be showing a full marathon. $20 will get you all three movies. And that's a cool deal, if you ask me. If you're going to watch them all at once, there you go. See them on the big screen. And I'm hoping they do the same with The Hobbit, because I might go see that.
Right.
Yeah, I can't think of any movies coming out. And I can't wait till May of next year, though. That's when The Avengers 2 comes out.
Oh, yeah, trailer. Oh, my God. Yeah, we didn't talk about that trailer. I mean, just briefly, amazing.
Yeah, all right, let's close out the podcast with a review of this trailer that they accidentally leaked. And if you were looking at me, you'd see me doing the quotation things with my fingers.
Yeah.
Man, can James Spader narrate.
There are no strings on me.
And you know what? It was so funny watching that trailer. I kept tilt his head to the right, just like the Blacklist James Spader. Tilted to the right and talking the gravelly voice. Hey, Blacklist. The no strings on me. That's an awesome idea behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got to look at the real, well, I don't know, how would you call it? Anyway, the Marvel franchise version of Quicksilver.
And the Scarlet Witch.
And the Scarlet Witch, too. Yeah, brother and sister, of course. Now, here's the thing. Their dad's Magneto, so we're going to figure out how they're going to cross that one in. It just was a nerdgasm right there watching that. I think, Eric, you said it best. You're just going to sit squeal like a little girl as you get to the end of this thing.
Yeah. God, it was that trailer was so well put together. I mean, it's just, they know how to push fanboys' buttons, and I mean, that just did it. Every frame of that is just awesome. And I know if you guys have seen, like, online where people have come through and literally deconstructed frame by frame of the entire trailer and said, well, this is what this means, and this is what this is indicating, and this is so-and-so, and as someone who hasn't read the comics, I'm still enraptured by this. I was like, oh, that sounds cool, you know?
Yeah, well, they're all leading up. Eventually, they're going to get to the Civil War storyline and other things that are in Marvel that have just been some great storylines. Now, Tim Coker, I've got to ask you this, and I can't remember. Isaac was, he and I watched the trailer several times, and he says, you know, everybody's yelling and screaming, oh, the Hulkbuster armor. The question is, why is he battling the Hulk?
It's a good question. There's I don't know. I have an idea, because there's another scene that I saw that leaked. Mm-hmm. Somebody shot it with their camera phone or whatever. Mm-hmm. And camera phone? Boy, I sound like Grandpa Simpson. He had a camera phone in 1996. So, anyway. But yeah, somebody filmed it, and it's this shot of Cap, of Steve Rogers and Tony Stark, like, hanging out at this, like, cabin out in the forest, you know, and they're like splitting wood with axes and, you know, like you do and having this debate, and they're talking about, do you guys want to hear this?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're basically talking about, they seem really on edge and kind of uncomfortable with each other. And they're talking about the Scarlet Witch messing with their heads and showing them their worst or something like that, or bringing out their worst. And, you know, Steve makes some comment about Iron Man, you know, running wild or something like that, or messing up. And the idea being that maybe that's why you see them fighting each other, is that, you know, their kind of worst case scenarios or something have been shown to them. And, it being a Joss Whedon joint, if that's the case, then we know that those things are probably going to feel pretty emotionally raw and real, because he's really good at drilling down to that stuff. So that's what I think is happening, but that's all I know from like the 2 seconds of, you know, footage I've seen.
Right.
Well, I mean, from what I know about Civil War, I mean, that is basically this big conflict between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers,
right.
Is it not?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, it just makes sense that they're going to start building that tension at this point so that it, you know, comes to a head for Civil War. I just hope, and this was really my biggest complaint with the first Avengers movie, really one of my few complaints about it, was that when they had the little spat between Rogers and Stark and Thor jumped in, it felt forced. It's like, okay, we've got to have these guys square off against each other, so let's, you know, manufacture.
Are you talking
some...
about on the helicarrier?
No. They're having the big fight in the forest.
Yeah. Okay, go on.
Right. I mean, it just felt manufactured. It didn't feel organic. It didn't feel like it was a natural thing. And that's the only thing. And it's like, okay, if we're going to start to build these serious conflicts between these characters, I want to believe them. I want to believe that they're that. You know, well, okay, just as on the opposite side, as a great example of how to build tensions between two good guys was the tensions being built between Nick Fury and Steve Rogers in Winter Soldier. I mean, they both were coming from a good place. They both had different ideologies and had reasons for feeling the way that they did. But those ideologies were definitely at odds with each other. So if they can build something in like that, and, you know, I, having not read Civil War, I have no idea what their conflict is based on. But if it's something along those lines, and hell yeah, I'm all for it. I just don't want it to feel forced, like, okay, well, we've got to divide these two characters, and so, you know, let's manufacture something that would split them apart. It really needs to come from who these characters are, and, you know, and feel like a natural conflict. So,
well, Eric, I'll tell you that the Civil War, the basis behind that is that they're at a point where the government says, hey, if you got superpowers, you need to let us know you have superpowers. You need to register. They create a national registry for superpowered individuals, and Captain America says, no, they don't need to register. You'll use us as weapons. And Tony Stark, he's on the other side saying, yeah, everybody register. And when you register, you have to give away your true identity. And in the Civil War, the Civil War comic run, I loved it because Peter Parker, Spider-Man, he was with Tony Stark, and that's where they created the Iron Spider costume, which was so cool. But anyway, he fought, and the whole struggle with Peter Parker alone made that series really stand out, because he didn't want to put his family in danger by revealing his true identity.
Yeah, I was going to say, Parker wouldn't reveal his identity.
Well, he did. But
Tony Stark talks him into it, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Stark talked him into it, and it's like he unmasked himself in front of everybody in the world.
At a press conference.
It just became a whole different thing. Now, granted, at the end of Civil War, Doctor Strange put a spell on everybody and they forgot. That was great. I thought it was
all a dream.
Yeah, it was a little snow globe on the side of the bed. But anyway, that I liked that, because I couldn't stand to go on with, because that's the part of the struggle is his identity. But that was one of the big major factors in Civil War that hit home with for me, made me more emotionally involved with it. Is the fact that, okay, you're going to register, you're going to give your true identity, and everybody in the world's going to know who you are. And at the same time, Cap was on the opposite side. No. And so that's what led to the Civil War.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, well, I can see that as a legitimate conflict then.
Yeah.
Not sure why. I mean, I can understand Rogers' viewpoint a lot more than I can Stark's, unless Stark had some angle that he was playing. I'm not sure why Stark would be so passionate about everyone having to register or reveal their identities. But I'm sure there's
something about defense contracts involved with Stark.
That's part of it. But also, you know, Stark
along with Reed Richards and Henry Pym in the comics, mm-hmm. are utopians, you know, and they really believe that their intelligence is going to be able to solve any problem if they just apply it and figure it out.
Yeah.
So Tony believes that he's going to be able to keep the genie in the bottle, mm-hmm. even uh-huh. though, you know, even though it's completely being set up to fail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very high stakes stuff. And it's, you know, when you complain about them fighting, Eric, it's funny because, like, to me, I'm so used to it because as a lifelong Marvel fan, that's what they do. When they meet, sure, they fight. Yeah. Some reason one of them flies off the handle and they get into a fight. And, you know, so to me, I see that original fight in Avengers and I think, well, Tony Stark's an arrogant son of a bitch, and he really thinks that nobody, you know, nobody can stand toe-to-toe with him. And Thor, you know, while he got a lesson in humility in his movie, he's still Thor. He's still the Prince of Asgard.
Right.
And you know, he probably, you know, that's his brother. You know right. what I mean? So to me, it's not that much of a leap that the guy who just on a whim went to Jotunheim to try to start a war, that as grown up as he was, that he couldn't lose it when set up with as deliberately provoking a guy as Tony Stark, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that in Civil War, the thing that was good about it, and it wasn't all good, but what was good about it was that it made sense. It was reasonable question to ask is, how would people tolerate masked, superpowered people just rampaging around and doing whatever they want? Mm-hmm. And what would really happen? What would happen is that at some point there would be a 9/11 level mm-hmm. disaster, which is what happens in the comic, by a bunch of young superheroes who are in over their heads. Mm-hmm. And they take on the wrong villain. A school gets vaporized, basically. Mm-hmm. And so now, basically, they're saying, yeah, if you wear a mask and fight crime, then you've got to sign up and basically be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
I'll tell you
and,
what.
And
Yeah. If you want to catch up on Civil War, Graphic yeah. Audio have done an audiobook version of that entire Civil War run, and it is
really
it's awesome too. The guys they got playing the characters are perfect. The voices are just spot on, and it's one of the best. I mean, if you don't want to read the comic, well, which is silly, but if you want to listen to a really good audiobook, they've put it together. It's a Civil War put out by Graphic Audio. They've got special effect. I mean, they got sound effects in there. They've got music. They've got, it's like their tagline for that company is a movie in your mind, and it really so much is. And they do a great version of Civil War, and it sums it up within about 6 hours of audiobook listening.
Huh. Well. Along those same lines, I got to say that I believe that we, you know, because I used to read Hulk comics. Those were probably, I read more Hulk than I did any of the other comics from Marvel when I was a kid. I used to get those big, legendary, oversized comics. Yeah. I've got, like, still got two or three of those. One of them is where Hulk versus, his name begins with an M. He's like a big head.
MODOK.
Yeah.
MODOK.
Yes. Yes, I will always remember that one. I love that issue. But anyway, the thing with Hulk is that he's a great character for crossovers because he's so out of control. He is by nature out of control. So having him go toe-to-toe with any of the other heroes is completely believable because no one can control him, even Bruce Banner.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But when you've got two intelligent guys that, you know, and meanwhile you've got this impending menace that, you know, that's about to destroy the world, and you've got two intelligent guys that are, like, taking it out on each other extensively, and it's like, what are you, schoolboys? Anyway, that was my only issue. I just, you know, it felt, it, you know, it's like, okay, these guys are usually, even Tony Stark, when it push comes to shove, will do the right thing and knows when, you know, how to prioritize things. But here's these guys that are just, like, taking this time out to just destroy an entire forest. And, yeah. you know, I don't know. It just felt a little forced to me, but it wasn't a deal breaker by any means.
Well, I think, you know, with that Hulkbuster armor and in the trailer and everything, like I said, Isaac, that was the first thing he goes, all these people yelling about the Hulkbuster armor, they should be happening. My immediate response was, I think they're leading towards Civil War in this, but they still got to get through the Infinity Gauntlet first before they get, they're going to tell that story first.
Yeah.
Then they're going to do Civil War.
No,
Civil War is going to be, Captain America 3 is going to be Civil War.
Oh, is that right?
And then after that, Avengers 3 is going to be the Infinity thing. So.
Oh, okay. I had it the other way.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, right, after Right, after Avengers 2, the next time we see Cap and Iron Man will be in Civil War, where probably we'll see everybody on one level or another, because that's the whole point. Except the Guardians of the Galaxy, of course, because, you know.
Well, wait now. I've seen interviews where Robert Downey Jr. plays a big part in Cap 3.
Yeah, no, that's the thing.
Yeah, because that's Civil War,
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that's the thing, is he was talking about doing an Iron Man 4, but what ended up happening was him just taking a big seat in Cap 3, which makes me a little bit sad, because that means it's not really a Cap movie. It's more of a Marvel team-up movie.
Yeah.
If it plays out that way, because I wanted the next movie to be Cap and the Falcon looking for Bucky.
True. Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Oh, it was so good, man. The end of that movie. Don't you want to know? like it's the same thing with I Want a Black Widow movie, just to watch Black Widow deal with her life after all of her secrets are out there in the world.
Hey, and how she too.
You know, I want to see that movie too. You know, it's so frustrating that we only get X number of these, but at the same time, it means that they're all events and they're all exciting. So I guess I should look at the right side.
So the best part of it is, kids, read your comic books. You get more out of them that way, and then the movies are just to be the plus.
The more you know.
Yeah, and I will totally recommend the Civil War comic from Marvel. Like, I will go on record as saying that the ending is terrible, but everything that leads up to the ending is like just super exciting. And if you feel like maybe Tony Stark is acting a little bit out of character, or Reed Richards, it's okay. You just go along with it, because it's really exciting to watch them all have a reason to fight.
Yeah. And like I said, that graphic audio book is one of the best. It's superb. I loved every minute of it. Check that out.
So you said Reed Richards, but obviously Fox isn't going to let him use Reed Richards. So I guess they're just cutting that part out of the story for Civil War. Right.
I think that Hank Pym will be the replacement for that.
Yeah.
Bleep me if you have to, but why does Fox have to be such a bunch of they just played nice, like Sony's playing nice. They could all make a lot of money and make a lot of fans happy, but no. Fox has to be total jerks.
It's so frustrating. And like, as much as I thought Days of Future Past was pretty good and First Class was pretty good, I didn't love either of them, but they were both pretty good for me. Mm-hmm. I'm really tired of this kind of off-brand version of Marvel characters. Like in 2000, it was a shock to get that first X-Men movie and have them get so much of it right. Mm-hmm. But now I look at it and it just seems incredibly compromised compared to, you know, the pure crack that we're getting from Marvel, where they're fully embarrassing the characters. And, you know, I think that obviously they've killed off Wolverine in the comics, and they're not, you know, the speculation is that they did it so that they can basically no longer promote Wolverine, because as we know, Marvel is not allowing any new X-Men toys, no new X-Men t-shirts, no lunchboxes, no pillowcases, nothing the kids would want to play with. Mm-hmm. And they're canceling you know, Wolverine's not in the comics. They're not creating any more mutants over at Marvel. And it's the same thing with Fantastic Four. They canceled Ultimate Fantastic Four. You know, they really want to starve these characters out so that there's no profit for Fox, because movies are just a tiny piece of the pie. And if they can't have the rest of the pie, they'll probably decide to sell out.
Yeah, well,
at least once Hugh Jackman is too old to keep being Wolverine.
But he never ages.
Right. If anyone's listening and wants to know that full story, I posted an article, because I didn't know a lot of it either. And I posted an article a couple of weeks ago on our Facebook page that explains the whole beginning to end, you know, fight between Marvel and Fox. And it's some really interesting stuff. And I really was kind of on the fence about the whole thing before I read that article. And now I'm just like, you know, Fox is just a bunch of
Well,
they ruin everything.
They did. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to call an end to this podcast, so let's do it. It's end.
Yeah.
All right. Well, once again, support the podcast. Buy a T-shirt from our merchandise table, if you will. It's you can see it on the webpage at nerduppodcast.blogspot.com, or you can go directly to it, cafepress.com/nerduppodcast. And also, if you want to reach any of us, just tweet us at nerduppodcast, and that's at nerduppodcast. You can leave out the at And again, leave us a voicemail on the webpage. A whole bunch of ways to get in touch with us. Do that. In fact, you can get a hold of me. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill.
I'm Tim Coker. You can reach me at Tim K. Has to Say.
And that's it for the podcast this week. We'll see you next time when we feel like we need to talk nerdy with you. So once again, thanks for joining us, and stay nerdy.
Nerd Up Podcast.
The www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.